Okay. Well, sadly, I don't get to use the Brittany mic because it doesn't go with the glasses and I've got the wrong hairdo. So I'm going to have to use this. So my moment of stardom is passing me by. Okay. We're going to look at this morning at the book of Esther. And sadly, sometimes, the book of Esther, the book of Ruth, very often is consigned to women's meetings or women's conferences, because that seems appropriate. But actually, in these little books, there is a tremendous amount that God can use to speak to us. And over the last maybe 3 or 4 months, I've been reading through the book of Esther and just looking again and trying, we can become almost over familiar with stories that, we almost can read it, speed read it, without really thinking about what the words are. And I've really gone back to this book and to the character of Esther and tried to look at it again through fresh eyes, tried to see it again through fresh eyes. We think the book was written around 478, 473 BC. As we know, the Babylonians had taken the Jewish people captive, and now the Persian Empire had conquered the Babylonians. And so we're looking at a period in time when the Persian Empire was ruling. And we have a king that gets various pronunciations, so apologies to anybody who pronounces his name differently to me, but it's Ahasuerus or Xerxes in Greek. That's my bit of Greek for this morning. But the important thing here is that the king, Ahasuerus, now I've got to almost spell this out, was part of a religion called Zoroastrianism. Never going to be said again because I'm not even sure I pronounced it right the first time. But this king believed in God. They believed in a god called Ahura Mazda. I hope you're impressed. Are you taking notes? They worshipped at a temple called the Fire Temple. But what's important for us to know right now, and what's important for the story, is that crucially, the religion was very tolerant of others and of other religions. And so the king was very tolerant of the Jews and of Israel. And because of that, he then allowed the Jewish people to almost to make a choice. So some people decided to go back to their own land to rebuild the temple and to form their communities. Some people decided to stay and to almost have communities within the Persian Empire. And so Esther and Mordecai, we know, stayed within the community in Susa, which was the capital. And our story starts really with the king throwing a party, throwing a banquet. And just actually in the last, I think it was last week, Al and I were watching a program about the building of Versailles. Louis XIV, the Sun King, who was just incredibly rich, incredibly powerful. You know, his word was law, He sort of sneezed and everybody quaked. And he got to the point where he demanded all the nobles of France to actually go and live at the Palace of Versailles. So one reason was he could keep an eye on them, but also to show his power. You know, his word was law. And the king here was exactly the same. He was very, very powerful. He was very rich. He was very extravagant. And so he threw this incredible party for, it seems like, all and sundry. And the party went on for weeks and months. And then we get to the point where he calls his queen, Vashti, to come and to attend the party. But she's already throwing her own party for the women of the court, and so she refuses to come. And I look at that and I think Vashti at that point somehow had lost her purpose. She knew what was expected of her as a queen. She knew that, if the king called, you went. that there was no refusal here. There was no, you know, messing around. He spoke, you did. But she got caught up with other things and almost lost sight of the goal, lost sight of the purpose. And as I was thinking about that, I was looking back over, you know, the last year that we've been here. And it would have been very easy for us as a community to have lost sight of our purpose, you know. We could have had, and we have had, and experienced certain frustrations, shall we say. But it would be easy in that then to lose sight of the goal and to lose sight of the purpose and to lose sight of, well, actually, why are we here? We're here because of the people. That's our purpose. That's our goal. The periphery doesn't feel like it sometimes, but really the periphery is the building. The purpose is the people and doing what God has called us to do in this area. We know then that Vashti was removed. So the king now needs a new queen. We read that the king's men then were sent out through the land to look for the beautiful young women, to look for the best, and to bring them in. And then this is where we meet Esther. And just reading and maybe looking into the background, looking at her attitude, we have to say that this young woman was devout, a young Jewess. We wonder, was she maybe sheltered? She'd lost her parents. She was being brought up by her uncle. Had she been very sheltered, but she would certainly have been instructed in the ways of the Jewish belief. Had she known slavery? We don't know just quite the timeline of all these things. Did she know what it was like to live under the Babylonian slavery? Did she know, all that went with that? We don't quite know. But this girl hadn't had it easy. You know, we sort of think nowadays, you know, losing your parents, that's horrendous to be so young and lose your parents. But sometimes we can read these stories and forget. She would have had the same emotions. You know, she would have been a young girl, young woman, losing her parents, being in a situation that was alien, that was not good. Now, I don't think for a minute that the king would have sent out a little note telling everybody that he was popping over to their village and could you get all the nice young ladies ready? I don't think it was like that at all. I think these men would have swept into the villages and just literally gone around the houses, taken these young women and taken them. They didn't need anything. Everything they wanted would have been supplied by the temple, by the palace. So these young women were just taken out, ripped away from everything that they knew and taken off to what must have felt like an alien land to her. There was no niceties there. You know, would she have had to have walked? We don't know. We don't know. No chance to maybe say goodbye to Mordecai. Suddenly, her world has been turned upside down. Suddenly, the security that she knew, the life that she knew, has gone. And this is something that she could never have planned, never have thought about. And I think for all of us, you know, in this, I'm sure all of us in this room have been there where it's almost like life has been going on quite nicely. Suddenly we wake up one morning and it feels like we're in an alien land. Everything that we knew, the security that we knew, everything even maybe that we believed in, everything that we thought, suddenly it's like the rug has been pulled from under our feet. We wake up in this alien land, facing things that we thought we'd never have to face, dealing with situations that we thought we would never have to deal with. And here we are in this land that is so foreign to us. How do we react? How does Esther react? I remember somebody saying once that it's not so much our actions, but it's our reactions that are the powerful witness to those in the world. When we know what's going to happen, we can plan for it. But when we don't know what's going to happen, suddenly it's like, God, where are you? What am I going to do with this? You know, if you watch all the old films, particularly the Hollywood blockbusters, they will show you the harem where Esther was taken as this amazing, beautiful place with lovely pools, and the girls have all got lovely floaty dresses, and they're getting, and they're usually sitting eating grapes like this, aren't they? And it's all very, very pretty and very wonderful. I don't see it like that at all. I see it more like Harrod's sale on January the 1st. You've got 500 young women going for one place. You've got 500 girls there. They know there's only one position for queen. So I see it more as a little bit of elbow pushing. Me first. Let me have the best perfume. I want the best grapes. Why should they be any different to maybe mankind now? They weren't. Sometimes we paint this amazing picture of people in the Bible that somehow they were a different species. They weren't. They were human. They had all the grabbing instincts that we have as humans. I want to be first, you know. I want to see, yes, that's my goal. I want to be queen. I'm going to make sure I'm going to be queen. And so there's that pushing and shoving and jostling for position for that one place. But we read there was something about Esther that marked her out. There was something about her that made her different to all the other people, to all the other girls. And God gave her a protector, Haggai. He was like, if you like, the boss of the harem and looked after everybody. But he noticed Esther. He noticed her amongst all the other women. And God gave her this protector, Haggai, who watched out for her, who made sure that she got fed. I can imagine Esther being at the back of the queue for everything. I can imagine where everybody else is pushing and shoving and trying to get through, that Esther would be just waiting at the back. But Haggai made sure that she got what was needed, what was deserved. He protected her. And I can look back through my life and I can see people that God has given me as a protector. God, obviously, is our ultimate protector. But sometimes in life, in his love, in his faithfulness, in his graciousness, he brings people alongside of us that almost act as our protectors. I remember Abby being in hospital and going for her operation. And Alan and I just knew the doctors and nurses were God-given. Everybody else who arrived the same day as Abby had had a particular nurse who had caused all sorts of bruises up and down arms. And we were a bit late getting there, admittedly. But when we arrived, we had a different nurse who was just incredible and gentle and loving and just was just amazing. And I just thought, this is God's protector. He has provided what we needed. I remember when I first started working in an office, and a huge table, there was about six women working at this particular table. And regularly, most days, a woman used to come up to behind me, and one of my jobs was dealing with the post. And she would bring the post and she would say, oh, these are for the God botherer, and slap them down on the table. And then she'd go away. And then during the days, she would come back, you know. So where's God today then? You know, and just ridiculous things, really. I wouldn't react the same now, but I didn't know what to say. I was very young. It was my first job. Oh, this woman was older than me. Oh. But God provided on that table a lady who became my protector. So when this woman came up, she would say, if you haven't got anything nice to say, don't come here. We don't want to listen. And immediately and through the week, she protected me. She watched over me. And she was a blessing to me, God's provision. I think, you know, when I was ill, sort of 4 years ago, God provided Alan as my protector for that year, because I really don't know how I would have got through that year. But Alan had to be made redundant for that. And you can look back and think, what a ridiculous thing to happen. You know, that can't be right. That can't be right. But God knew what he was doing. He's given Alan a fantastic job that he loves, and he comes home with a smile on his face every day, and it's lovely. But during that year, God knew that I needed a protector. I needed somebody there who would stand with me and walk with me. We see that Esther didn't become bitter, she didn't become angry, she didn't become resentful, but she continued to walk in the ways of her people, of her God. She continued to seek out Mordecai. She continued to look for him, to seek him out, and to get wise counsel from him. We don't know, that might not have been very easy. She was shut up away in harem. Mordecai really would just walk backwards and forwards in front of the gate, hoping maybe to see Esther. Did Haggai help her to get to Mordecai? But she continued with what she knew was right, with what she knew was good. You know, sometimes if we're honest as people, we land in an alien land, and it becomes not that easy to find God. It becomes difficult to communicate. It becomes hard to find those times where we can relate to God. And we feel distant. And we feel that God is distant. And we feel like, oh, yesterday was a million miles away. Where am I today? But you know what is amazing? Through the years, and particularly when I was ill, God has given us a family. He's given us a community here that are our protectors. And I just think back, you know, for the body here, how God has used you guys as protectors, certainly to me. I'm certainly a beneficiary of it. Where he has provided people, it may be somebody who's, you know, sent a verse or a text, somebody who just rings up. It may be a song or a chorus, or it may be a Bible reading, or, and suddenly you find yourself protected, and people wrap themselves around you. And it's not just coming to church, it's being part of a body where we protect, where we watch out, where we gather round, and where we help, where we walk with each other. We know in Esther as well that the name of God is not actually mentioned. And I think it's very easy to think that he's not there. His name's not mentioned, so obviously he's not there. And I've actually asked John if I can share this story, and he said I could. So thank you. And it reminded me, when I was looking at this, thinking, you know, because God is not mentioned, it doesn't mean to say he's absent. He's not absent. And sometimes when we're going through those times where, oh, can I see God? Can I hear God? We just have to remember that he is not absent. He may be out of our vision for a minute, but he's not absent. He is still there. He's still behind us. He's still in the wings, if you like, working and planning the purpose that he's got for us. But I remember this little story. It reminded me of John. John would have been about 4 or 5, I think, and David was probably about 3. And we'd gone up to Yorkshire, to Bridlington, with our friends, and we were on the beach. And we were coming, end of the day, coming up off the beach and up onto the prom. And then there are 2 ways to get to the car park. One was you could walk along the prom and up the slope, or you could walk the zigzag path. So we all came up off the beach, John with his little bucket and spade. It's a nice picture, little bucket and spade. He's ahead of us and decides to walk along the prom, but we knew the quickest way was up the zigzag, so the rest of us walked up the zigzag path. And Alan said to us, he said, you keep going, But he said, I'll follow John and see where he's going, what he's doing. So John sets off down the prom. Turns around, doesn't see Alan, but keeps walking for a little bit longer. Turns around again and realizes that he can't see anybody. There's lots of people. It's a very busy beach. So he turns his bucket upside down and sits and waits. Because he knew that Dad was there somewhere. Couldn't see him because the prom was full of people. Couldn't see him. Didn't know he was there, but there was something in him that responded to his father that said, but I know he's there somewhere. And I know he's not going to let me go. And obviously Johnny's here today because we did find him. And Alan did pick him up. And sometimes when we don't see God, it's so easy then to try and plan and to scheme and to push forward in things that we think might be happening. When sometimes God is literally saying to us, look, turn the bucket upside down, sit, wait, listen, rest. I am here. I am here. But just wait, just rest, just listen. And then in my time, we'll move forward and we'll go forward. Esther then had to complete a year's preparation of spices and ornaments, and that in itself is a lovely sort of study for you to do yourselves. And then she becomes queen, and it's almost like that's when the problems begin. She's gone through all the years, she's had all this preparation. This is the pinnacle now. I'm going to be queen. It's going to be lovely. It's all going to be, you know, I'm going to be queen. I've got all these maids and I've got the best of everything. But almost for her, this is where her problems begin. And we know there was a plot then by Haman to destroy the Jews. And it seems like Esther is now caught in the middle. There's no way, as we read on, that she could go into the king by herself and go into his presence. Obedience could have cost her her life. And here she is now, wondering, I think she must have wondered, what was all that for? What's God doing? You know, I thought his plan was for this. And now this is happening. Gosh, have we felt like that? If we're honest, have we felt like that? When we've waited for something, when we're absolutely sure that it seems like, you know, God has taken us along here and we almost feel we can see the goal, and then God says, whoops, round the corner, I'm going this way. And then we try sort of, you know, pushing things back a bit maybe. Well, if I do a bit of planning, or if I do a bit of this, a bit of that, and it's like, ooh, and that tension comes and we pull and we... And things don't seem to work out as we thought they would work out. And it seems that the path we were going on, we suddenly come to a brick wall, a dead end. And sometimes at that point, we can become so absorbed in the path that we can see that we can miss what God is doing. We can miss the big plan. And we begin to look down, and as we look down, we can only see around us. We can only see, a couple of feet around us. But we can't see the bigness of what God is doing. And then we can become frustrated, and we become disillusioned. We can feel lost. When I look back over my life, I think, my goodness, how did I get to today? It's like, gosh, how did I land up in Newport here in Fairwater? And, you know, I think back to when I lived in Yorkshire and thought, never heard of Newport, you know, didn't know where it was. New life. And yet, God in his grace and his love has led us one day at a time, has led me one day at a time. He didn't tell me about Newport way back then when I was growing up in Yorkshire. I didn't need to know it then. I needed to know, what's happening tomorrow, Lord? Where are you for tomorrow? And so he leads us, doesn't he? One day at a time. No, their day is filled. Painful, happy, sad, joyful, or for most of us, chaotic. But it's that one day, just that one day at a time. And the promise, and I think we sang it in one of the songs this morning, you know, the promise for us is through those days, one day at a time, he's actually changing us from glory to glory. How amazing is that? How amazing is that? And if we allow him the freedom to reign, if we allow him that freedom to be the king of our lives, then he's promised that he's going to bring his purposes about in our lives just by changing us one day at a time. And sometimes, you know, sometimes it's good to look back and think, gosh, I look back and think, oh gosh, was I like that then? Oh, I must have driven my mother mad. I used to try and tell myself that when I had my own kids. Remember what you were like, Chris. Remember what you were like. And you look back and you think, oh my goodness, was I like that then? But actually, you know, God has brought me so far. Yes, there's loads of things that I know are still wrong. And there's loads of things that I know God has got to change. But I'm not what I was like back then. And he's used every day to change and to conform us to his image and to make us like him. And so he changes us from glory to glory. And then we come to this amazing verse right in the sort of centre of this book in Esther 4:14. And it says, "And who knows whether you have not attained royalty for such a time as this?" And I really felt this week particularly, as I was just reading and reading that verse, I do feel that there are, for some here, I do feel that this verse is prophetic for you this morning. You know, I think it was Steve talked the other week about, you know, God bringing us together. Would we have come together naturally as friends if we hadn't been Christians? Probably not. You know, different. We have different lives, lifestyles, different jobs, etc. Probably not. But God has brought us all together with all our quirks and idiosyncrasies and disappointments and hurts and angers and everything else. But I really felt God saying to each one of us and to me as well, who knows whether you are in new life? Who knows whether you're in that house? Who knows whether you're in that job for such a time as this? We don't know what God is going to do. We just can't imagine what God is going to do. And we might feel, yes, we're here with our frustrations. We seem to still have half a building. And how are we going to manage in tops time? Because we're already shoving them in through the door and shutting the door quick. And, you know, and where are the youth going to go? And will the office be ever, you know, be up and running? And it's like God comes and says, just a minute, for such a time as this. God has brought us together, I believe, to do something exciting. You know, he doesn't waste time. You know, he knows what's happening. He knows about all the things that would maybe concern us. But what he's saying is, no, do you know what? I've brought you together for such a time as this. And it's to do something exciting. I feel maybe for some people there are things that you've kept hidden in your heart. Things that you've hoped for, things that you've prayed for, things that you've planned for. Maybe for you this is Resurrection Day. Maybe for your hearts, maybe for your visions, maybe for your hopes and aspirations. This can be Resurrection Day for you. Maybe it is that we're going down a certain path and it doesn't seem to be as fulfilling as it was. There's something about it, doesn't seem right. And maybe it is that God is saying, well, you know, we're going around a corner here. We're going to hit another level. We're going to hit another pathway that I want to take you down. There's a verse, I've read it from the Message in Revelations 2, and it says, "Are your ears awake? Listen. Listen to the wind words, the spirit blowing through the churches, and I'm about to call each conqueror to dinner. I'm spreading a banquet of the tree of life, fruit, a supper plucked from God's orchard." We have to be more aware of what God is doing. You know, I feel excited at what God is already doing. You know, in spite of the difficulties that we face, but there are already, God is dropping those drops of blessing. People are getting born again. You know, thank God the room is bursting with mums and tots. You know, it's never been too much. We always panic. I think Becky always panics every week, you know. Oh my goodness. But it's never too many. And it's just right. And it always seems to work in. And the youth club at Pentrebane, those kids keep coming back. Every fortnight they're there, they're coming back. And there's been times on Sunday morning where we've just known the presence and felt the warmth of the presence of God. And he is saying to us, not to get caught up in the small and the periphery, but listen, watch. His calling for each one of us is for such a time as this, as this. I find it incredible that the God who made the universe, and how beautiful, you know, Al and I were just coming along the M4 this morning and saying, you know, we think we live in a sort of industrial bit, but you look out and there's the hills. All around us, there's the hills and the spring and the sunshine, and just how beautiful, how amazing it is. And God has created all of that. But in his heart is a purpose and plan for each one of us. And I just find that incredible that we can, you know, we're not all lumped together. Oh, this is the plan for new life in Fairwater. His plan is individual. His care, his concern is for each one of us as individuals. And that I just find amazing, that God's love can be such that he watches each one of us. It's easy for us to look back, or we can look back with rose-coloured spectacles. And, oh, wasn't it good when, you know? We often hear that, you know. Or the boys tease Alan sometimes and say, oh, when I were a lad, you know. And it's easy for us, isn't it, to look back. Oh, wasn't it good when? Didn't God bless us when? Wasn't this when? It's just as dangerous, though, to look forward. In the sense of, well, when the building is done, or when this happens, or when we've got this in place, or when. And God is saying, that's, you've missed it. If that's the way we're thinking, we've missed it. No, God is saying, look now. What's happening now? And you hear, you know, Al and I have a privilege of knowing sort of quite a lot of people throughout Wales, and you hear of a church that is setting up in the centre of Wrexham. And then you hear of a man in Pembroke who's been healed of cancer. And then you hear of this happening in Carmarthen. And you hear of a church. God is on the move, but we have to watch. We have to take our eyes off the periphery and watch for the goal. Watch where we're going. Esther, as we know, was able to fulfil her task. And you can, you know, read all that. That's really a different story. She was able to fulfil her task, and she was able to, you know, help to save the people and the Jews and give them life. They had life instead of death. But when I was looking at this, I also looked at the festival, the Jewish festival of Purim. And this is all, it's almost like a footnote. After the events of the Book of Esther, the Jewish people then set in the celebration of Purim. And at this festival, the Book of Esther is always read. It is, I suppose, like the festival of the Book of Esther. But for the Jewish people, this is party time. This is celebration. They turn up in their best clothes. They bring cymbals. They They have groggers, which I thought was like an old-fashioned musical instrument. It's not. It's people who make noises. So we're all groggers. We can all be groggers, okay? Sounds great. I love it. Groggers. So much so that even the children would bring toys that made a noise. So, you know, fire engines with sirens or xylophones, or everybody would bring something that would make a noise. And they would just make this noise as the book of Esther was being read. And every time Esther was mentioned or life was mentioned, this huge noise would go up and people would celebrate. Every time Haman is mentioned, they would then boo. Sounds like a pantomime. It's great. I love it. We'd all say, boo. Great. And there would be this massive celebration. They were remembering the deliverance from death to life. They were remembering how they came really on the brink of death and they were saved. God saved them. And so they celebrated. Purim is just like an amazing sort of celebration. Do we see that? Do we realize that? When we come together on a Sunday morning, when we get together as groups in the week, do we come with a heart that's ready to celebrate? We are celebrating deliverance from death to life. We're celebrating hope, eternal hope. We're celebrating God's purposes and plans for us. We're celebrating life. And it's easy to get to the point where we think, well, we come on a Sunday morning because that's what they, you know, somebody will tick us off and that's what we should be doing. And, you know, well, we go to home group because, you know, that's, again, what's expected of us. And so we turn up. It shouldn't be like that. It shouldn't be like that. This is the time to celebrate. Celebration of what God has done for us. And gosh, haven't we got a lot to celebrate? Much more than Esther, much more than the Jewish nation then. How much have we got to celebrate who God is and what God is? I read a little saying from a modern theologian, Hobson, and he says this: our Christian culture needs to cultivate an anarchic lightness, a lust for freedom, a celebratory spirit. It needs to learn from the boom in the festival culture. And we yearn to join a crowd that is celebrating. Christianity is meant to be a religion of celebration. We need to be the people who celebrate. You know, Alan and I were on street pastors on Friday. You know, what do they celebrate? What have they got to be joyful about? But we should be the people leading the way. We have got so much to celebrate, to enjoy, to rejoice in. Yes, this is not saying that we're unreal. Yes, there are days when it's difficult to get out of bed and we feel disappointed and we feel let down. But when we come together as people, when we come together to celebrate, this is where our protection and encouragement comes in, where we can come together and draw from each other and celebrate with each other what God is doing in our lives, in individual lives, in our church, but also in our nation, because God is moving. And don't you think people looking on, when they see people who celebrate, who really do mean what they sing, where the whole body shows it. I mean, it would be lovely if we all had groggers, and that would be great. We'll dish them out next week at the door. But that should be our hearts. It's a heart attitude, isn't it, of celebrating what God has done, what he's doing, and what he can do. And that will draw. You know, you only need one person to start laughing. You have no idea what's going on, but it causes you to laugh as well. And where people are celebrating, enjoying what God is, who God is and what he's doing, that becomes so attractive. People want to be a part of that. They want to know what's going on that makes you so happy, so celebratory. So certainly as we think of Palm Sunday, and that's what the children are doing, so that's probably why you've got all the noise there, waving palms. You know, that was before Jesus died. We know that Jesus died and rose again. We have that. How much more should we be a people who celebrates?